Welcome to Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. Want to connect with Howie? Email him at howie@israelnewstalkradio.com. Now here's your host, Howie Silberger.
Imagine a world where babies could be kidnapped and murdered, choked to death, or some other kind of horrific murder done by hand, and the world doesn't care. Imagine a world where the baby's mothers could be kidnapped and murdered, and then promised that their body would be returned to be buried in an appropriate way. And then another body is returned, and it takes days till they get her body back. And the world doesn't care. Imagine a world where bodies of babies are returned to their home country, and there are still people standing on the street corners celebrating the murder of these young, innocent people. You don't have to imagine this is what's happening. It doesn't take much to understand the evil that is associated with supporting this kind of barbarism. It's unfathomable that people living in free societies would be standing in support of baby murderers, yet they are. Brutal murder of two innocent, beautiful babies. And the world stands in silence. About 30 years ago, I had the absolute honor of being fairly close friends with a man named Dan Nimrod. Now, Dan was an Irgun fighter in the early days of Israel and was instrumental in arming the Altalena, the Irgun ship that was blown out of the sea by the Haganah, with the guns and tanks that were on the ship that were headed to Israel to fight in the War of Independence. He worked in France, and he was instrumental in arming that ship. And Dan and I talked about the Arab-Israel conflict for a long time, for many, many hours. He had just written a book called Peace Now, A Blueprint for National Disaster. And we were discussing the book. He gave me a copy, and we were discussing the book. And I said to him, and at the time I was a little naive, and I said to Dan, hey, Dan, I just want to understand. You don't believe a two-state solution would work? Because at the time I was naive, and I felt that maybe, if the Arabs got the land that they claimed that they wanted, maybe, just maybe, the war between the Arabs and the Jews would end. And I said, Dan, do you not believe that giving land for peace is a viable option? I mean, your book clearly says it's not. But why do you believe that it's not a viable option? And Dan looked at me and almost laughingly said to me, Howie, you have to understand. You have to understand the Middle East. He said, Americans don't understand the Middle East. Westerners don't understand the Middle East politics. He says, you have to understand Middle East politics. He said, and the second you understand Middle East politics, you will understand why this is not a viable option. And I said, Dan, explain it to me. I just don't get it. I was young. Not as learned as I am now. Dan said to me, Howie, imagine you are occupying a house. You're a squatter in a house. And then the owners of the house show up and say, hey, you've been squatting here for 20 years, 50 years, 100 years. It's now time for you to leave, and we're going to take over the house. You're going to say, I have landed rights. The house is mine. And the squatters will say, I have a deed. The house belongs to me. I paid for it. It's mine. And the two of you will fight over who has the right to be in that house. He says, this is what's happening in the Middle East. He says, the only problem is that in North America, if you're squatting in somebody's house and they come to claim the house, and then you say, I have a right because I'm a squatter and I've been here, I have the right due to the fact I've been here for so many years, you'll go to court and then court will decide who legally has the right to do this. In the Middle East, it's all about war and it's all about might makes right. So what will happen in the Middle East, instead of going to court and deciding, as they did, the United Nations decided that Israel would be formed in this part of the land and that there would be an Arab country in another part of the land, instead of accepting the court's ruling, which in North America you would if you were a squatter in a house, he said, in the Middle East you'll go to war. And the strongest army wins. But that doesn't mean that the other side goes away quietly. It's not like a squatter who will leave and go find somewhere else to squat. In the Middle East, they'll lick their wounds and they'll come back for more. So if you win the war, you've won the battle. But you haven't won the war, is essentially what he was saying. So you can win that war, but there'll be plenty of wars following that war because they will never accept the fact that you won. Because might makes right. Doesn't matter about legalities. Laws don't matter. It doesn't matter about who is actually right and who is the lawful owner of the land. It's irrelevant. It's 100% totally irrelevant. The only thing that matters in the Middle East, he told me, was might. The strongest army holds the power. And you see that throughout the entire Middle East. That people who have the strongest armies, people who have the armies behind them, hold the power. So we saw Hosni Mubarak, who was the leader of Egypt for 30 years, overthrown, just tossed out of his government, tossed into jail because his military leaders changed. So the might made the right. You saw that in Romania with Ceausescu. You've seen that many, many times where governments are overthrown by their military or people who have their military behind them. Might makes right. And so the Middle East works much in that same way. That if you hit me hard, I have to hit you harder. And while Western democracies and Western people, and people with Western ideals, don't really understand that, and if they do understand it, they don't really agree with it. Oh, well, why does it have to be so violent? The truth of the matter is, that for centuries, that's how it's worked in the Middle East. And that's how land has been conquered and reconquered and conquered again and again and again through wars and through might. So when Hamas was able to walk into Israel on October 7th with very little military resistance and kill 1,500 people, they felt that they had the might. They were taking down the man. They were taking down the powerhouse in the Middle East. They were able to kidnap over 200 people. Whoa, that was unfathomable. I think they were even surprised they were able to do that. But it's very hard. It's very difficult to manage 200 hostages in your terror tunnels. Nobody imagined that they would come back with 200 hostages. I know they offered all these citizens, these peaceful citizens that stormed into Israel on October 7th. They offered them all $10,000 a head for people who, you know, bring back hostages. So they just grabbed whoever they grabbed. They grabbed bodies. They grabbed people. They grabbed kids. They didn't care who they grabbed. They were getting $10,000 a head. This information came from them testifying that they were getting $10,000 a head. During after they were captured and during their questioning. So they didn't care who they grabbed, they just grabbed anybody and anything that they could grab to get $10,000 a head. Because the pay for slave program still exists in Gaza, as it does in the Palestinian Authority, and the world remains quiet. So it's hard to manage 200 people, so you have to kill some of them, and you couldn't keep babies because babies need constant care. And you're not going to let the mother constantly care the baby because you can't, because you killed her. So what do? You kill the babies. And that's what they did. They killed the babies. Now, if this were any other group, had the KKK kidnapped black babies and murdered them, there would be national outrage. There'd be international outrage. People would be marching in the streets. The fury of the world would come down on Hamas. There would be condemnations in the United Nations. There would be heads of states getting up and giving speeches on how horrific it is that babies were killed and how we have to crack down on white supremacists and end the scourge of white nationalism. You would have hundreds of people getting up and screaming and yelling and protesting. And this would be the normal reaction of normal people to a monstrous group taking babies and killing them. Yet when it comes to Jewish babies, and when it comes to holding Jewish prisoners, hostages, there's an unbelievable silence. It's crickets. That's all I hear is crickets. No one's screaming. No one's yelling. There are no protests in the streets. Nobody cares. And the more we talk about it, and I get emails all the time. This show airs all over the place, and I get emails all the time. Howie, why are you talking about this? Let's move on to something else. But there's nothing else to move on to. There's nothing else that's more important than this at the moment. I don't care what Donald Trump is doing. I couldn't care less if he's putting tariffs on the whole world. It doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that there are still hostages being held in Gaza. What matters to me is that the world is not demanding that these hostages be released. What matters to me is that the hostage takers are still torturing Jews while the world stands by and watches. During the last release of hostages, the hostage takers brought out hostages they weren't releasing and put them in the audience to watch. Then they forced a hostage that had been held captive for over 400 days, tortured, beaten, hung upside down. They forced him to kiss his captors in front of the camera. Kiss his captors. Then they gave him a goodie bag, a loot bag, because that's what these hostages need when they're leaving, loot bags. And I hate to degrade them, but I'm going to. The stupid left in North America, stupid left-leaning media in North America, I actually saw this on MSNBC. A pundit arguing that the hostages couldn't have been held badly. They were even given gifts when they had to leave. The hostage takers were so upset that they were losing their friends, they gave them parting gifts, is what this person said. It's mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing. How does this happen? That there are people in the world who are so dumb and so naive and so blinded by their hatred of the Jewish people that they can make statements like the Hamas hostage takers, really cared for the people that they were holding hostage for. They gave them loot bags as they left. What a ridiculous thing to say. Yet it was said on national television. And no outrage and no kickback. Nobody cared. What happened to the humanity? What happened to the people in the world who actually care about things? Oh, sure. They'll get up and they'll scream and they'll yell. And they'll jump up and down. If you say a bad thing about a black person, or if a white cop kills a black guy, you'll have thousands of people in the street. Oh, sure. Yeah, that'll happen. But what happens when you kill Jews? Silence. Jews don't matter. Jewish life doesn't count. And so we're stuck as Jews. We're stuck in a corner, really, where when we defend ourselves, we're told to stop defending ourselves. But when we don't defend ourselves, genocidal maniacs come to try to kill us. As Jews, we're stuck in a corner. Israel has the impossible task. It's almost like Sophie's Choice. Protect our citizens and be condemned by the world, or don't protect our citizens and have them annihilated and our country destroyed. These are the two choices Israel has. Now, it's not the first time this has happened to the Jewish people. This has been a continuous trend over centuries where nobody cares about Jewish blood, where Jewish blood is cheap and it rolls down the streets and nobody gives a damn. It's not the first time. And I hate to say it, it won't be the last time. One hopes it will be, but history has proven this will not be the last time that this happens. So where do we go from here? How do we move forward as Jews, knowing that the world hates us, knowing that every corner of the earth has people who want to kill us? They stand in the streets and they say it openly today. In Australia, they call for the death of Jews. They light synagogues on fire with Jews inside them. In North America, they shoot up Jewish schools. They yell globalized intifada at pro-Hamas rallies, which essentially is calling for an indiscriminate attack on the Jewish community, physical attacks on Jews. And the police, you say, oh, the police are going to protect us. But you look at the police as they stand there, impotent, as the Arabs call for the murder of Jews. And when the police are called to task on it, they say, well, we live in a free country. They can say whatever they want. But what about incitement? There's laws against inciting riots. There's laws against inciting violence against people. Well, they're not really inciting. They're expressing a political opinion. But that political opinion is kill the Jews. Well, it's a political opinion. What do you want us to do about it? But if it was the KKK standing there saying kill the blacks, the police would arrest every single one of them. It's inciting hatred against the black people. How could you do this? There's laws against this. But there's only laws. It's selective application of the law. They don't apply the law when it comes to inciting hatred against the Jews. They don't care. And as a Jewish community, as Jews, that's a really scary position to be in. It's a really horrible position to be in. We've been in this position before, though. This is not the first time we're in this position. The last time we were in this position, a Holocaust happened. A mass genocide of Jewish people happened. This time, the Jews are not going to allow themselves to be led to the slaughter. They're not going to allow themselves to be put into ghettos and to sent to concentration camps. That's not going to happen this time, like it happened last time. But the sediment and the riling up of the populations is repeating itself. And we are now at a point in this ramping up of Jew hatred where it is potentially conceivable that a mass genocide of the Jewish people could happen in Europe or North America. It is potentially conceivable that the thousands of people who are standing in the streets supporting Hamas, supporting baby killers, people who killed babies with their bare hands, as the Israeli forensic scientists found out when they did autopsies and whatever investigative procedures they had to do on the bodies that were returned. The people standing and supporting the monsters, and that's an insult to monsters, by the way, that killed babies with their bare hands. What makes you think that these people wouldn't turn and kill Jews with their bare hands? What makes you think that these people would be civilized in any way? Just because they live in North America doesn't make them civilized. Living in a place doesn't make you civilized. and bringing your problems, bringing the hatred you have from your home country to another country, to the country you emigrated to, doesn't help the situation either. So mass immigration of people from countries that hate, bring that hatred to other countries. And then that hatred spreads and you have people in the streets yelling globalized intifada. I don't believe for a second that given the opportunity, the people who are yelling globalized intifada wouldn't go and kill Jews. I think they would. I think give them an opportunity, they'll do it. They're already shooting up schools. They're already throwing firebombs at synagogues. They're already attacking Jews on the streets. They're already yelling, kill the Jews. They're already blowing up synagogues in with Jews inside them. It is a situation which is escalating. And the Jewish community is not fighting back. And the world community just doesn't care. Brian asked the question, why does Israel give so many more prisoners back to Hamas and they only give a few Jews? Because Hamas doesn't value life. That's the answer. So when Israel values life, Israel says, okay, listen, I'll do anything to get my people back. So I want them back alive, and I'll do anything to get them back. So you want prisoners, you want people who attack Jews, you want people with blood on their hands? It's no problem. We'll give them to you as long as you give us back our people. And we'll value our people at 500 to 1, because that's how valuable our people are. That's how valuable Jewish life is to us. And Hamas knows that Jewish life is valuable to Jews, and they continue to exploit the fact that Jews value life while they value death. If a Hamas operative or a Hamas supporter dies, they become a martyr, and they put their picture up and they say, oh, my son was martyred to save Palestine. My son was martyred. And what is a martyr? What do they consider martyrdom? When you take an infidel out, you're a martyr. So you go and kill a Jew. Jews are the infidels. They're the infidels because they have a state, they have a country, and they have a government that's running land that used to be Muslim lands, was part of a Muslim caliphate for 800 years. Because Jews stole Muslim land or are occupying Muslim land, therefore they are infidels and they are occupiers and they must be killed. It's basic Islam. And so you become a martyr when you kill an infidel. And so every Jew that's killed, every time they kill a Jew anywhere in the world, because Jews all over the world support Israel. And if you support Israel, you're supporting the infidels, and then you become part of the infidels. You see, it's a really corrupt system. And so every time a Jew supports Israel and gets killed in the diaspora or gets killed in Israel, the person who kills them becomes a martyr. And martyrdom is honorable in Islam. It's honorable. It's actually not even honorable. It's what they want to do. They want to be martyrs. They strive to be martyrs. Their whole life is dedicated to martyrdom. It's a death cult. They want to die. And Jews want to live. Tell me. Maybe you could explain it to me, because I really can't even imagine this. There are still people calling for coexistence, for put down your guns, put down your weapons, stop fighting, coexistence. So you're telling me that the children and the grandchildren that survived October 7th must live side by side with the people that killed them, that killed their parents and killed their grandparents and tried to kill them? That this is somehow a sustainable coexistence? This is somehow how peace is supposed to be done? When we talk about Hamas torturing people, the plan of coexistence, the plan of a two-state solution, would be a bigger torture than whatever Hamas is doing to the prisoners in their terror tunnels. You would be torturing the people who survived. You'd be torturing the people who are living, who lived through the horrors that Hamas put upon Israel. How dare anybody suggest that? Yet there are people running around saying this is the only solution. No, it's not the only solution. People have to start being honest. People have to start understanding the situation. People have to look at the situation and say, hey, wait a second. We cannot, not even for one second, accept the fact that there are still people running around in Hamas land that have blood on their hands from October 7th. We cannot for one second imagine that there are still people running around who were the people who killed the Bibas babies, who put their hands around the Bibas babies' necks and choked them to death, crushed them bodies to death. A toddler and a baby. And the people are still in existence. We cannot for one second fathom that the people who tied up hostages and hung them by their legs and beat them and raped them could continue to live freely and coexist with the Jews. Yet there are people out there who are still claiming that this is the only solution. And these are not the people who will go and live in Hamas land. They're not running to live in Gaza. The queers for Palestine aren't running to live in Gaza. Although I really wish they would. They'll understand really what Hamas is. It's unbelievably mind-blowing that this is what we're dealing with. That the world just doesn't care. That we're living in a world where killing babies is okay, as long as they're Jewish. Where we live in a world where stealing people is okay, as long as they're Jewish. Hamas has been releasing hostages that they've been holding for decades. Nobody cared. People tortured in Hamas prisons, in dungeons, for decades. And not a peep from the world. And what gets me even more, and while we're talking about this, might as well just go way back. What gets me even more is that the people yelling right now about bombs falling on the heads of Gazans were awfully quiet when bombs from Gaza were falling on the heads of innocent Israelis. You never heard a word from these people when bombs, rockets, were being fired from Gaza, landing on the southern communities. Communities which, by the way, were pro-Arab, which were pro-Hamas, which were Jewish communities trying to help the people of Gaza. Organizations that they were running that were trying to put together programs, social programs, to help the children, and food programs, and driving them from the border to the hospitals, and allowing them to help, and supplying them with produce and everything else that they needed, and calling for peace, and condemning their own government, calling for peace and coexistence between them and the Arabs of Gaza. What was the thanks that they got? October 7th. Massacred, destroyed. These were the towns that were attacked. Towns that were pro-Arab, towns that ran organizations that were pro-Arab, that were pro-Gaza, that wanted to help Gazans. People who dedicated their entire lives to fighting the Israeli government on behalf of the Gazan people. These were the people that were killed on October 7th. These are the people who were taken hostage on October 7th. Nobody even mentions it, but the music festival that was having, the Nova Music Festival, was the Nova Music Festival of Peace. It was a music festival to foster peace between Gaza and Israel, to encourage the government to follow a huge rally that was held just a couple of days before. It was the culmination of a weeks-long activity that was calling for the government to recognize Gazans and allow them to come into the country and work, to give Gazans more rights in Israel, to help them economically, to build up their country, and allow a true Palestine to exist in Gaza. These were the communities that did that. And they were massacred on October 7th because the Gazans didn't even care if they were killing their friends. They came in not even caring who they were killing as long as they were Jews living in the Jewish land. They knew full well coming into the country that many of them were going to die, that many of them were going to be captured, and that many of them will face the wrath of Israel once Israel retaliates and comes into Gaza. They knew this full well. There were no secrets. There were no hidden secrets here. They knew they weren't going to overthrow the Israeli government. And their only mission, as testified by people who were captured, was to murder as many Jews as possible. There was no political goal. There was no political motivation here. The sole goal was to murder as many Jews and to terrorize Israel. To say we could hit you anytime we want. Anywhere you want. And it was really cruel and unusual punishment that the Gazans put onto the Israeli population October 7th. Because they knew after decades of launching missiles indiscriminately into civilian populations and not being condemned by anybody or not being forced to stop by anybody, they knew that when the sirens went off, as they did on October 7th, the Israelis living in these southern towns would be running to their bomb shelters. These were the safe havens for them. This is the only thing they knew. They grew up, many of them, knowing that they had to be 5 seconds away from a bomb shelter. And so when the sirens went off, they ran to their bomb shelter. So the Hamas terrorists that came in on October 7th, the Hamas civilians, the Gazan civilians that were taking $10,000 a head, when they came in on October 7th, they knew where to find the Jews, in the bomb shelters. And that's where they went. And many, many, many Jews of southern Israel, many, many, many citizens of these kibbutzim were killed in their bomb shelters. Murdered in their safe zones by Hamas terrorists who were civilians of Gaza. And these are the people you want us to coexist with? These are the people you want to make peace with? People who are still cheering, standing and cheering as hostages are being humiliated in front of the world? Who are standing and cheering when the bodies and coffins of babies are being displayed at a rally in some grotesque kind of parade? These are the people you want to make peace with? This is pure evil. And I hate to say it, but it's true. Pure evil has to be eradicated. You don't negotiate with pure evil, you kill pure evil. Because if you allow evil to exist in the world, it just continues multiplying. And allowing evil to multiply and allowing evil to continue, suddenly the wrath of evil that's spun upon the world is not those people's fault anymore. If you sit by quietly and you allow it to continue, if you don't stand up as a good person and fight back, if you don't say anything and remain silent, then you're as responsible as they are for whatever havoc they wreak across the world. You can't sit silently. You can't sit back and say someone else is going to take care of it. Your voice must be heard. Too often, as a Jewish community, we sit back quietly and we believe in the Zeitgeist philosophy of the shtetls of Europe. Keep quiet. The quieter you keep, the less waves that you create, the less trouble that will come to us. It's not true. We need strong Jews. We need good Jews. We need Jews to stand up and fight back. That's what we need. Failing to do so, you're just asking, you're begging for the Jew haters to come and kill us. Let's not invite our murderers into our living rooms. Let's not invite the murderers into our establishments. Let's not invite the murderers into our communities. Let's finally get up and say never again and mean it. I'm Howie Silberger. Thank you for joining me. I'll see you again next show.